KellerKeller official.com.
You need the Kellervision app. 24/7 mini documentaries, podcasts, live shows, DJ live streams, top fives, subscription packages, plus products for all your podcasts and street culture sports. Download it from the app store for free today.
Instagram UK frontline.
Beatbox created.
Killer Keller.
And we're here to talk about world music and street culture.
Killer Keller podcast.
Let the fucking games begin. Ladies and gentlemen, Killer Keller podcast live and direct, central London, as central as you need to be, all locked in and present. Big shout out to all the regulars. Hold tight, graffitikings.co.uk. And yeah, well, anyone check the Kellervision app, you know what to do. All things street culture and more, free download for your iPhone and Android. Right, switching on now, click, click. How's it going? Lovely to see you all. And without question, we have inside the ride for this particular show the life and times of one man that, as a prominent fixture across the 90s, most definitely the late 80s, 90s graffiti scene. Many of you will have heard of the Untouchables, TU, the Notoriety. There is one man here that will be talking and representing, speaking candidly for the first time, the mighty Steam, TU.
My brother.
How are you?
Hello.
How's it going?
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah.
You're legendary yourself, my brother.
My guy.
So it's an honour each way. So it's always a respect for me and the rest of the Untouchables.
Thank you.
And I'm sure many writers out there, definitely, especially the young ones who're not really in tune with the old school.
Yeah.
And want to learn and get into how the old school grandmasters felt and how they fear or how they were chased or they fought or and how they finished their pieces.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the honour's with us too, my brother.
Thank you, my brother. the weight in this conversation, and I don't just mean weight in like pressure heavyweight. I'm talking the weight. A lot of people have said, "Yeah, I'll get some TU on, get Steamer on, get you know what I mean, get some representation of that era." So for you to say that, not only am I like, yeah, well, I don't know why this is taking so long. I mean, we were even on the phone. You were like, "Bro, I feel like we've met before."
Yeah. This is the first time anyone's got me to speak on camera.
Yeah.
But we got a documentary that we are planning on, so we'll get into that later and share that with the people.
Yeah.
And make them realise all the old stories, the old crazy stories are not lost. And they'll be told in a way, in a form of documentary for them to be able to journey with us through that.
Yeah. I feel like that's the only way, really. Yeah. I mean, what we're going to get into right now is comprehensive to you and your life and story. But when you're talking about something of such magnitude, like, the intro just doesn't do you justice. Like, the Untouchables, by the name, are so synonymous with a particular era and time.
Yeah.
Mad.
First, I know Ray's.
Yeah.
My brother.
R.I.P. Ray's.
May they all rest in peace.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Ray's. Skyling's main to you. Raised to you, Uni to you, Evil Jonja to you, Ganja to you.
Yep. Rest in peace.
Death, after a while, gets to you, and that's the dangers of graph. Yeah. No one expects to get chased, and maybe one of your friends or even you could die. Mm. It's not something that we really
looked
and had in a warning red light in our heads, like when you're crossing the motorway and you'd be looking to see a fat truck doing 80 miles an hour You want to make sure you're not in the way. But we never really feared it like that. And that's... So when the death started to happen, it's more the trauma and the injustice is the what really hurts, you know?
The justice part.
Yeah.
That is kind of like the salt in the wound.
You know, Ray's mum is very strong, Marilyn.
Mm.
Yeah.
Big shout out to Marilyn. Yeah. I remember seeing that her, it was a very seminal moment in the Kings and Toys documentary where the conversation, the topic of Ray's and the forfeit of being a graffiti writer and, you know, just feeling the pain of that. And I'm sure that was echoed across the whole of the crew.
Oh, goodness me. You know, most of the writers didn't know, but for TU, it was the loss to raise his mum was humongous. Yeah. Being the only son, you know. And Gary Ray's was a quiet guy. He's not loud. He's not someone you expect to have an accident like that. No. So when we was chased, and I know he was pushed by one of them police.
He was pushed.
And BTP, but they never admit it. Because Ray's tried to get up. So we had an inquest, and what hurt the most is when a grown man can do that to a small child, and just expressing art and chase these children, even pushing, make sure they didn't get up. And then it come to an inquest and lie. And that's what really got to us as TU. We felt not just they murdered our brother, also they lie. And the justice is nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
So we thought the only way we could get justice was to do as much paintings as we can and raise his name.
Which became the mission brief, wasn't it?
Yeah. We swore to do 1,000 pieces in his name.
Whoa.
And we achieved 986.
That's a boatload.
986 and... Them times, gosh.
That must have been like a daily operation.
Yeah, I mean, hey, say, jut, rhyme, and ganja, hopper.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these names.
Remember these names.
Are the last moments of TU.
Mm-hmm.
For that battle, you know, we saw it as a war.
Yeah, war was on.
Against the BTP, the LTs. And then try and do your art against all that hate and all that injustice. Some constant battle inside. So we had no choice but to achieve that. So many pieces and they was there till the last moments. One chase. It was just me and Say in Ripmansworth. It was really nice, hot day. Remember, we're kids. And so we started the piece. We always start the piece before we do throw-ups or tags, so we straight start the piece. We got in the middle, and the chasers on, you know, they came from each direction. So we thought, okay, because these times, it's not like it's before, like when Ray's died.
Yeah.
This time, TU has trained. Not only were we training, we was more or less expecting to die.
Training in what respect?
Jogging, shadow boxing, sparring. I myself knew a lot of, you say ground enforcement training. I used to break bones. With that strength, you don't want to lose another friend.
No.
So you're going to do everything you can for each other at that age.
That's like the highest, that's to the highest level of commitment in graf I've ever heard. I mean, I know this exists, but for you to sit there and say, right, a war was on, it was a mission, it wasn't just, this was bigger than graffiti.
Yes. My brother, you got to remember, BTP, the head of BTP, I can't even remember this guy's name no more. There was four of them, and they've arrested most writers, and they were assigned to, after Ray's died, they were assigned to the Untouchables. So he went on the news, and he came off the news. On the news, he gave a warning. What happened to our friend could happen again. Ooh. And we should be careful, and we should watch ourselves, and hand ourselves in and not paint no more and carry on with this foolishness. We saw it as an insult, an attack, not just on the honour of Ray's, our brother, but it was an attack on the whole, the Untouchables. So we went to war, and that war we won because it doesn't matter what chase they came with. Dogs, everything. We had it with them.
Really?
And we fought toe-to-toe. They never stopped an Untouchable ever again in the yard. Never. Because we trained and we knew, rather than to lose one another,
yeah,
you know, we were stronger together.
Yeah.
You know, they're grown men and we're children. Yeah. So we're stronger together.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, we did survive, you know. But in the latter stages, it dropped to the numbers of Untouchables going to yards was maybe up to five of us. Mainly Jut, Say, Rhyme, Ganja, myself, and Hopper. We did most pieces, whole cars, top to bottoms. We'd done the whole trains, you know. These were serious pieces, you know. And then we started becoming like two teams. So I'd be with Say or Jut, and Rhyme would be with Ganja or vice versa. And we'd swap like this and rotate.
Right.
But each time we'd make sure one is equal to the other, and we'll never surrender, never leave the other. You know, we, together like this, we would make it out of the yard. So I remember teaming up with Say, and this was at daytime, you know, it was a bold move. Rickmansworth, them time became hot. They started spotlighting, fencing, and yeah, they started going American style, didn't they, with the security. So they put up cameras, but only on further down where the shed began. So we thought, we'll do not the sheds, the trains, that's outside the sheds, you know. Daytime, we just thought, yeah, we can get through this quick.
Fucking daytime.
But, you know, it's like thinking about it now, it's probably suicide.
Bonkers.
Yeah, you know. But we was at war. Yeah, we lost our brother.
Yeah.
So we had to go in, and we couldn't lose for the honour of Ray's.
Yeah.
We didn't even care for what they would say about us. Yeah. We just cannot afford to lose another Untouchable. For the honour of Ray's. And Ray's his mum. You know, because she was like all of our mum. You know, if it wasn't her and my mum, I wouldn't be able to come through the door of the church where Raze was there. And he wasn't moving, so I couldn't talk to him. So it was difficult for me to walk. Them steps were hard. It was hard. And without them two, you know, and they walked me up and I saw Raze. And he had the electrocution across his forehead and his neck. And his thigh, they said. So he tried to get up. And the dogs, they must have pushed or kicked him. And, you know, you could tell they was lying in the court. So many mistakes. They said they didn't chase us. Then they said they chased us. And there's so many. And they still came up with the verdict of some accidental. And it was like, whoa. So that day in Ricky was like a flashback for me, but Say wasn't there. And they came prepared with dogs and everything. I think it was about 40 BTPs there because they was out to get us. They knew it was to you. Someone gave them head, told them heads up, you know. It's like they probably sit in the cars waiting for you, but they look like they were well prepared. And as soon as we start running, you have to jump over someone's fence.
Mm.
And then you got fawn and bushes and all this. And when you get through that, you're on the street. So when we got to that part where you're about to see the street, woo woo, they're everywhere. So the two of us can't defeat them.
Mm.
And we're not out to hurt police. We're just out to do art.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It's them who's out to hurt us.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to defend ourselves rather than die.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So being children that age, we had a lot of go.
Mm.
You get me?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like some power, you know, whether it's from the creator.
Mm.
And in your prayers, you believe, you know. You wouldn't have done it alone.
Mm.
Yeah, so it's good that there was two of you and you had God in your heart.
Mm.
But that chase was the longest chase I had, you know, in graffiti. Because it was over 30, 40 minutes. We ran from Rickmansworth to Wembley. And on, off.
Fuck.
Helicopters.
Yeah, yeah.
We saw two helicopters. One was with us from Rickmansworth. We got to Rainers Lane, something like this, South Harrow.
Yeah.
And another one. So.
So they were just like dominoes, knocking, trying to knock you down.
Oh, yeah. This time we've gone through fawns and we've got cuts everywhere.
Yeah.
Say used to wear ski goggles.
Because
his eyes were twitched to the sun.
Right.
And he wasn't able to tell the colours properly.
Right.
So he said, yeah, I'm going to wear my ski goggles.
Oh, they ain't give him a B-boy than that.
Yeah.
So he was rocking it, but, oh, yo.
Yeah. And, you know, that chase, you think to yourself, your heart sinks, because you think, could this be where they get to stop us? And everything's going through your head, racing. All the time, you've been running for more than 3-4 miles.
But the adrenaline's in, you don't recognise it. You're just still, you know that what's coming, so you're just running from the...
Yeah, we got through the bushes, the forms. It was so... Say actually had a stitch. He didn't tell me, but then this time I could see him like this, wincing. Yeah. He said, Steve, can't do it. I said, you have to soldier.
Yeah.
For Raze.
Yeah.
You have to for us. You know, get for mum.
Yeah.
You know? And something came in him, we carried on and we got away. We lost them at Wembley.
Fuck.
We managed to, it was amazing. someone that we knew was a brother of one of the Untouchables, and he saw us, and we jumped in, and we got away.
Oh, that is so A-team, it's just rude. That was so lucky.
But that was just one of the adventures of Chase's. There's many, many. You know, but there was times when we decided to fight. You know, because when you're cornered like a cat, even if you're a girl, you're going to fight back because you're thinking, goodness, you know, the end is not good.
That's right. You've got to throw all you got at it.
Yeah. So Stonebridge, they made a mistake of trying to chase us when we was very, very stronghold. This is the...
How deep were you at that time?
The force of the untouchable.
How deep were you? Mm. Was there a lot of people?
So, Airways, Main, Hell, Sports, Peanut, Crumb, every soldier. You know, the King Hector, Nomad, Boys. I mean, we was not going to stop.
Yo.
After we had to make a statement of... Because remember, look, at these times, you had a lot of racism going on.
Yeah, let's go back to the date. So this was around...
This is 88, late 88.
Yeah.
Yeah, coming into 89.
Yeah.
There was a lot of racism.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, racism is something that we realised, because I grew up in Ivy Road. This is Kilburn, My best friends are Irish. Yeah. Mm-hmm. When I had Chinese, Indian, Mexican, and all sorts. Yeah. So it was, few would have their, their differences, but I never really saw racism until I met the police. And you'd be walking on the street at a young age, and they'd be driving past, shouting very abusive words, and sometimes just stopping their van, just embarrassing you, literally. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you're thinking, what the hell have I done?
It's cuntish behaviour.
And you realise it's because, literally, I am black, and I just didn't really see that. And, if it was vice versa, we still would have fought. Because we don't like that, hated that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so where we came from is unity with everyone.
Yeah.
So when you're getting abused from the police and, it got to a stage where Carnival
became... Oh, my God, yeah.
You would know from the riots...
Yeah, we've talked about this on podcasts as well,
The 85, 86,
and 87. It was a big deal, It was on the news, and it was, even where I'm from,
The Untouchables, when the news came up, it was the steam, as they said, but it was the Untouchables. The Untouchables, or the TUT, the original TUT, started, from four or five names. And Rizla being one, Hell being the other, Skylines, Airways, the ones that are not here, Peanut, so, and there's a few more, but they wanted to stay in the back and put us in the front first. With me, I wouldn't say I was a leader. If one of you talks sense, and there's 10 of you, and one of you is saying this is the safest route, and they all got that trust in you.
Yeah.
Naturally, the people outside that circle will see you as a leader.
Mm-hmm.
But I never saw myself as a leader of the Untouchables. I saw us as one
unit.
You could say as a unit, right. As a family, as an unstoppable, if we wanted... Unstoppable as as strong as a storm of lions. You know what I mean, we got to a stage where we was toe to toe in. with riot police and carnival because they decide to stop people having a good time because of the colour of their skin, you know, because they're enjoying themselves.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, so it was really brutal.
Yeah.
So literally we was fighting not just for men, we was fighting for women, fighting for little children
would get
abused as well, man, from the police and all these racist skinheads and all these things was around, you know. So that kind of sends a little trauma inside you at that age, do you know what I mean? So we wanted to get rid of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So we were sort of not revolutionising or revolutionists or some kind of...
But it had enough fire in you that you wanted to...
We just, like, to say, listen, you can't come in riot shields.
Mm-hmm.
Just running through women, boys, men, everyone having a good time.
Mm. Yeah.
And just... beating on them and arresting them.
Yeah.
Some people were killed by police. Yeah. So it was bad times, you know. So we was fed up seeing that on the news. So we had to go there and make a difference. You know, that difference was so you can come here, have a good time. You can smoke a spliff because you're allowed at carnival. I didn't smoke myself at them times, but I knew other people was. You know, you can eat, listen to music, you can dance.
Mm.
Some people would, you know, find the love of their life there or their best friend there,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, I've had that too. Yeah, that happens as well.
So, them carnival days, the memories wasn't too great for the Untouchables. So it didn't bring a break to our graffiti days. Mm. Just deviated us away. Mm. From being able to have 99.9% in yards, you know, that's where we was at our best.
So back to Stonebridge. So when we're talking about crazy yard situations, Stonebridge, we were segued a little bit, but you were getting into that. That was a mad one as well. That was a because you were. It sounded like you were team deep in that as well.
Yeah. On the news, they said the Untouchables are out of control. They need to be stopped. They're also known as the Steamers. They're using baseball bats, monkey wrenches. They're fighting London transport workers and British Transport Police. That's because we don't want to be chased onto the tracks and die. So we had no choice. We was fed up of running.
Huh.
You know, so when a kid or children at that time, that's what we were, children at that age, not even teenager yet, decide as a mass of group of all cultures to stop to run in fear of death, would rather fight.
Defend yourself.
Yeah, we had to start to rethink. This war could get really bad.
Mm.
We might end up losing another.
Mm.
And we did. Yeah, we lost Uni.
Mm.
And we lost a few Zone Bliss. There's loads of names. Yeah. So, when late 89, we decided... because I was on my own most of the time in the yard. I spoke to Jot and say, I'm Ryan. And I explained to them, you know, it's probably safer for them not to come yards no more with me. You know, because Barker and all these BTPs have put out death threats to all Untouchables. They literally said, if we catch an Untouchable in the yard, we're going to kill him. And that was every riot knew that, you know. So we had the death threat looming over our head. So I had to not be selfish and try and... because I know none of them are going to stop going yards because of that. They're going to carry on, but... You if I'm not there, maybe they will be not in danger.
Mm.
So that's why I was trying to be alone. And I became a lone wolf.
Did you?
In the late stages of 88 and 89 in the yards. Many pieces I did alone. Then BTP, they have many photos. Many. You know, to show the real art in so-called vandals
mm.
could do in its beauty for their dead brother,
mm.
for the honour. I'm talking beautiful pieces, you know.
Mm.
I've done pieces with rainbows, you know, and in all honesty, that night it was freezing. My fingers were frozen. It'd been snowing. I couldn't feel my toes or my, loads of problems. And I was able to paint a rainbow on top of the piece, you know, and the piece came out bright. And if you saw that, you wouldn't think in a million years.
Mm.
Oh, I bet his fingers were frozen. He was in pain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I bet loads of all the traumatic problems that come along before that joy of finishing that piece and for it to run.
Mm.
Just so that you could express your feeling with other people.
Mm.
This is what I did for my brother, and this is what I did for art. And I don't take it away from no crew. WRH, Tubbs Chaos,
All Tight, yes, yes.
CCD,
yes.
They all came with me to paint. Firm, he came with me.
Mm-hmm.
Cast, he came with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I had the honour, you know, to paint with everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't shy away from that. But they knew if they were with me, most of the time it was safe them times, you know,
mm-hmm.
before the war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because during the war, Cast or Firm wouldn't come to the yard with me, you know. Most people was a bit worried about going yards and right through.
So made you feel really isolated.
Mm. Yeah.
Or maybe did it give you more freedom? Was there freedom?
I felt like a lost lone nomad of a writer. But these times they said I was king of Met, big Met, and I didn't feel like no king.
Mm-hmm.
I was still hurting from rays, and then the deaths kept coming, you know, in other ways. Some would get stabbed, you know. So it was, the most of the joy came from just seeing the pieces run.
Mm.
I mean, we did a whole car that day in Stonebridge, me and Say, and that whole car. Untouchables, Steam, Rays in the middle, and Say at the end. And
the mind the
most,
wonders.
Yeah, the most famous one that everyone has seen from that yard is the Rays in Steam with the Vaughn Bode characters in blue and white. But the picture doesn't show you the other side of my piece. You know, there was another character, so I would be that Vaughn Bode and Rays would be the one waving with a teardrop, like to say, I've got to leave soon. Because I felt like he was with me in most of the yards. You know, so I wasn't alone. You see, most people think being a lone wolf in a yard is a courageous thing and some glamorous thing. But the depth of what goes through here and here doesn't compensate for the art that is expressed, because if it was really shown in what was then, what is now,
yeah,
the fear, the sorrow, yeah, the anger, the rage, the pain, yeah, the all the stress, and
there's just not enough that you can paint, is there? There's not enough.
It was all rolled in a giant bubble, and it's always so. If the heart had that much love to paint this, yeah, and so I took it deep to make every piece like as if it was my last, you know. But they don't understand the shadows and the sound you would hear, and even a little cricket a few yards away, you think, they're creeping up on me, huh? You know, and your mind's playing tricks on you, you know, whether it be them demons or whoever they are, because when you're that age, you're vulnerable to attacks. Most people don't believe in, until you're alone and the tracks near a yard, and you wait in there for 3 hours, and you're so cold, your joints are frozen, and you're not sure how the cans are going to even work. You tested one, and your fingers stuck to the nozzle. So, you know, and you have to breathe on it. And slowly your finger comes off. One time my tongue was stuck to the can. You know, I tried to, like this, because my hands are so painted. So I was like this. Somehow my tongue must have touched the can. And back then, guaranteed every Christmas there was snow. You know, that's the joy of back then. You
the
know.
Joy of painting by steam to you.
You know, so that them thoughts and what you go through is two different narratives.
Yeah.
And the understanding of how does the writer who did that piece that I'm seeing on this day where it's bright and sunny,
yeah,
but it's cold and breezy.
How many hours you've been in there waiting?
How did he, and what was he or she? And most of the time, only the artist carries that pain.
The pain.
Or that.
The burden.
Yes. You see, you know, and for the people, they feel whether it's anger, joy, criticism, whether they're thinking, gosh, I can't see through the windows. This is not too bad. You know, whether it's negative or positive, it's still a reaction.
Yeah.
You know, and the best reaction is obviously the positive one.
Yeah.
You know, and that comes from your friends and, you know, some people like this, a few journalists.
Super fans, you know, like me, shit like that.
Will be snapping up. Yeah. And I only started taking photos of pieces in 87. So,
can I ask you something? I don't want to go too far off track. Before we went on, you referred, I can't remember who it was you were talking about. It wasn't a writer. It was something else in context with something else. But you said sometimes you can see the devil in people's art. Full stop. And you can see the pain. And when you don't let the pain, this is my synopsis on what that kind of meant. If you don't put too much of the pain into the work, it becomes art, and it becomes the truest form of art, rather than angry. I'm paraphrasing, but that's kind of where you were going with it, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, sometimes it's good to show sorrow and joy and emotion in your art, but a lot of the time it's fixed message that you're sending. So whether you broke your finger, you cut yourself getting over that fence, you put how many holes in your clothing, your best jacket you tore on the fence, barbed wire fence, you're not going to express that in that piece. You've got it set. I know most writers do outlines before they hit the yard. I did that myself up until late 87, and I realised I could see the piece myself. Like, it's very difficult to put in words, but I'll try. Before I do a piece, the you know, even the general, Tom, young twin, the Thompson twins. This is the younger generation of the untouchables. They're still the untouchables. And he is the general of the untouchables now. But we was talking, he said to me, how do you do it? How do you see? And so I said to him, I don't know, but it started from then, late 87. But the more close I was with God, the more honest I was to myself.
True, you became true to what you were doing.
I could see a piece or a beautiful character without putting a single pen to the paper or can to the wall or panel. And I only realised most writers wasn't able to see them things. And then, Steam, where's your outline? And then everyone got used to it, especially into you, Jack, everyone. And I didn't need outlines no more. And I used to say, can you see it? Look at the rainbow, the walls are breaking. Look at that character, the B-boy stance. And they'd be looking at me like, yeah, Steam, yeah. I know some of them didn't want to say, no, man, just didn't want to insult me or whatever, but they just didn't see it. But I could see it. Up to this day, I could still see my art before I actually materialise it.
It's like a Jay-Z approach to rapping. Like, if you can... So people like to get themselves in the way of their own art. The best ones is when you're just like fluid, let it flow, like water, like, you know, Bruce Lee.
Yes. Water is, that's an element of life. And so is fire, like the sun. Without both of them, as you know, life is not sustainable. So if you're working against something like that... What's the odds and chances of you winning? Why would you even want to fight against something that keeps you alive?
Yeah.
That brings forth you to be able to bring other yous, and you have a family now, and my mum brought me into the world now, and my grandma, and do you know what I mean?
That's
the narrative of me. I don't eat death.
No.
I've been vegetarian for over 9 years now. Yeah, but partly to do with my mum's death.
Rest in peace. And, rest in peace.
I realised it's the in the Bible it says you are what you eat. I was in the paratroop regiment, Aldershot. This is in 91.
So after the graph, or still during the graph, but you were into the paratroops?
This is after.
Right.
And, you know, there you realise a lot of things, including discipline. But I was eating meat and all these things. It made me strong, I thought. So when I came out, I was eating, you know, all these different meats.
Six packs of chicken breasts a day, kind of sorts of things.
I was a huge guy. You know, I used to bounce off trees and I was nimble. And I could do the splits. And so I learned the ballet size of things to the extent of the gymnast rather than the dancer. You see, there's two sides of ballet. There's the dance ballet and there's the gymnastics. The gymnastics of the gym is what it means, basically, to be elastic, to be stretchable, to be placid. So if you can use your body like this, I haven't got much restrictions in my movements. So I always used to keep that strictly with my training, you know, and I used to be able to do the splits and all these things, but that time, you know, to think of me becoming a vegetarian or nearly a vegan would have been a no-no.
Yeah.
So
you couldn't foresee it because you had to take in so much protein that allowed you high performance that you were used to.
Yeah, the programming of, you know.
Yeah.
You get limitations, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, because when you turn 40 or 50, some of my friends, hey, they don't drink alcohol. Yeah, we're having Guinness here. Guinness. Yeah.
Keeps the doctor away.
You see, I don't really drink, but Guinness, I'll pop off.
And you're the Killer Cat of podcast, yeah, of course.
I've got love. But the problem is, a lot of my friends who used to not drink, they're still eating meat.
Yeah.
Their bellies out here.
Yeah, yeah.
They're looking like they're 60 in here. Yep. But really, they're in their early 40s.
I'm there, I see it.
How is this possible?
Mm.
And they're saying to me, well, you ain't changed much. And, well, you know, I says, well, I don't really eat the meat no more. And, you know, and I try and not impose it on them, but just let them see, look, I used to eat all these things. And you're only eating death because... why should I have to kill a chicken? Something that lives. I might as well eat a cockroach. It's no difference. It's just a different form of a creature, isn't it?
It's the juju in it. It's the act of doing it.
You eat a chicken, fish, prawn, spider. Some countries, they bloody insects on a stick, like candy.
Yeah, I've been to Chinese markets. I see exactly what's going on.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I'm not in it.
Brother.
No one's going to sell me that on culture, no way.
You go eat insects, you know, that's not on. So, obviously, the planet must be upset. Imagine the creator seeing, you know, seeing insects. You're going back to them days of dinosaur.
Yeah.
You know, so you got knowledge and there's food everywhere. So we got no excuse as people to abuse nature the way we do. So... I'm very strict on myself, and, you know, the discipline in there. I wish I carried it with smoking weed.
Vital is vital. By the sounds of things, Steam, and this is an observation, you understand, I feel like there is a regimented behaviour that I think it's built within your DNA. It's your personality. You know what I mean? Like, when you talk about TU, it's a machine. And I know you said that you weren't a leader, but you know when you have somebody, and I'm not, you know, for any second suggesting that no one, you know, you most likely had the same articulated idea and desires and ambitions and stuff. But when you as a person... it appears to me that you're a keen disciplinarian.
Yeah, well.
And that's really infectious to any crew or collective, whether you're a band or whether, you know, you automatically get assigned a particular role. And if you're that way inclined and you're a powerful nature and a disciplinarian and articulate, and I can imagine... But by default, I mean, I would trust you. I certainly would. I'd let you run. I would let you run into the fire, and I know you're going to get my kitten for me. Do you know what I mean? It's just one of those kind of scenarios. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but it's discipline. Also, suffering a loss.
Yeah,
and the individuality of our minds and our structural behavior in training, you know, became where even the ones that weren't training in martial arts or boxing or anything like that, you know, you had to have some kind of, like, listen, most people wouldn't think that Sky, Maine, being as dangerous as he was, huge as he was, and he was huge, and we was... like you say, it's, you know, it's a force you would feel, the storm of lions here.
Yeah.
We stopped to train in Hammersmith with the police, you know, because LL Cool J came when he thought he was bad. So T.U. took his chain, and so we held the train.
Hold on, mate. So you took LL's chain, you guys did the...
No, I'll be honest with you, hell managed to peel it off him was the word, yeah. So the security made a big mistake in Hammersmith, yeah. And, yeah, the whole dance was finished. Aloku J himself was hushed back to the hotel. He flew out the next day.
Really?
I know, it was in the paper somewhere, you know. But it wasn't intentional, it was so negative, and we wanted to hear things like Public Enemy because, to be honest...
You wanted the empowerment yeah, that they brought.
And the knowledge and try and seek peace and freedom.
Yeah.
Because, hey, listen, depending on what part of England you was, you ain't got freedom.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, you couldn't walk into a bank without them thinking you're going to rob them. Police have you embarrassed in front of everyone. You know, you'd always...
I appreciate 100% what you're saying. Because it ain't... You can't... For a lot of people, you can't just walk wherever you want. You can't be free to roam. And that's still the case now.
The regimental side came at a latter stage, you know. I didn't join the paratroop regiment till 1990. And it was a mistake by my side, but on the government side, oh, balls to when you're naughty. And they came in, they said, listen, the first Iraq war hadn't happened yet.
Right.
So they said, look,
before 92?
Yeah. So they said, look, we want to see if we can recruit people from this kind of system, you know, to see if before they go, you know, a naughty way. Said, yeah, why not, man? It's a challenge. Yeah, I'll go for it, man. So it was like a test for everyone in there. Yeah, so I was one of the nine from the whole of England. They wanted nine. And, you know, there was
That's insane.
Yeah, there was a lot more guys than nine who could then be captains, generals, colonels, and PTIs and lance corporals, you know. But my experience in parachute regiment, Aldershot.
Parachute regiment?
Yeah, so P1 you were, company.
So you were jumping out the plane. I mean, sorry, this is where I'm going down this. Yeah, excuse
it's not
the naivety.
Out of the plane, I didn't get that far.
Okay.
You get to the plane after the second year.
Okay.
And I was there for
I know nothing about
14
this
months.
14
and
months, okay.
I left on my 18th month because my mum, you know, I love her dearly. She's always with me. Mama. So is my dad and all the ones who's not here. But mum always worries about me, you know. And always try and make good by her. So... when she says to me to do something, I'd listen. See, I was allowed to call every 3 days. Yeah, we're allowed to call anyone if we had girlfriends. I had what you call a girlfriend. But I, you know, having a girlfriend wasn't really my thing then. There was too much art in me and the things around me was just too full on to be distracted by anything like a girlfriend. I saw it as girlish and, you know, and so I wasn't ready for that. You know, there was too much pain in the streets and all around you, you know.
And stuff that you'd experienced and then being in the army as well, that's a whole different... They build predators, beasts, don't they? They build. Am I right in suggesting that they take away certain things and replace them with more kind of stripped back?
Put it this way. Yes, you're right. You can imagine it in two ways. You can look on two men. One in your eyes is brave, strong, courageous. One in your eyes is humble, quiet, seemingly cowardly. Or just humble. not quick to fight, you know, even if you slapped him. But the other one, you know, is like, yeah. So that's the battle inside when you are in them places. So they want to take away that humble, that coward. Not a coward to me, but to them, he would be a coward. But he's humble. He's beyond hurting other souls.
Mm-hmm.
He's beyond brutality and primitive fighting. So he's more liberated than the other one. But the army want to take away that one from you and leave that one soul, instead of two, they want to destroy the humble one. They want to destroy the calm. Even if you slapped me, you know. The one that will talk to you. And so you had a generation of, like, yeah, very, very harsh soldiers, you know, heartless and cold, but disciplined in some areas. But, yeah, they tried to take away all them passion and love and care and all the way. And they retain it with another form, whether it's a clone care, that care is not with a heart. It's with rules and paper and what is said. Because, hey, whether you 10, 5, or 20, or 80, if them soldiers give an order to shoot, they're going to do it, aren't they? They're not going to think, oh, yeah, look, that's someone's mum. Or, do you know? And I'm not about to be that guy. And so when I realised that's what they were trying to do on top of the first Iraq war coming, and we was briefed, so when I was on the phone call to my mum, she had already spoke to the Lance Corporal that wanted me to be the PTI. He's the Mr. Cadman. Very, very, he was a rare soldier, but old school, brigadier. But he saw something in me and he wanted me to be whatever he saw, whether it be a perfect killer or soldier. And I didn't want that, you know, because I was good at boxing. I was good at music. I was good at everything, you know.
Good at art as well.
You know, most young people was at that age. Do you know what I mean? And whether you took 6 months to elevate to your skills, it will take a year, some people too, but you still get to elevate to your skills. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you had footballers, rappers, artists, some MPs, you know, all these potential people are all around you, but it's not brought out because they want to take that away. He's the one that saw some potential in me, and he said you should carry on with the boxing, you know, and he wanted me to stay in there to go on to be Lance Corporal PTI. And then going to the boxing regiment. And after we was briefed about the war, this is before they said it on the news. We get it firsthand, you know. So my mum told her my language, and she told me, you're coming out, you're coming home. You ain't going to fight in no war, and you're not going to kill anyone. But yeah, all to be killed. That's no way going to happen. So I'm not going to disobey my mum.
No.
And that's what my heart wanted as well.
But you're fucking glad you didn't go.
Yes, I am. But, you run away from one war and there's a war at home, because by no means it was peace. Hence why I lost so many friends. Even after graffiti. You know.
So what happened at that point, at that juncture of your life? So you come out of one war, and you're into this situation. Give us a synopsis on that.
It seems strange to you lot, but, you know, in 91, I'd only just start to hear about acid going into the elevation of hardcore. Not yet even jungle. I think it was hardcore and techno.
Yeah, I know the era. Carl Cox and, you know, even Groove Rider and Fabio, they were like all up on that.
Yeah, but
it was like house music.
I landed on the road out of the army in late 93, 92, coming into 93. And that's when I realised, goodness me, there is raves like jungle coming in from hardcore. Mm. And this music was serious. I was liking it. Because before I was into more hip-hop and Bob Marley, you know. Me and Ganja, he was the first person to introduce me to reggae, apart from my brother.
Tell me about Ganja. I'd love to know about Ganja.
Jason, Rel, God, man.
Rest in peace.
Wow. Yes.
What's he like as a person?
He had a lot of wisdom. He could tell you a lot of things about music, and the genres of music, different parts of the country, all the major things that's happening. He had a lot of information. But I noticed, good God, he was artful. He can paint, you know, and we'll be sitting down and all the, he'd be billing spliffs. On the other hand, he'd be doing outlines.
Just stuff it. That's the man be dexterous.
So when he joined TU, we was fully operational, you know.
Yeah.
We had, we was piecing that, you know. Yeah, the music of hardcore and jungle is what probably drew a vast number of colleagues in art into music, such as yourself, brother. You know, and you go into music, and music is another form of art.
It is, yeah.
So it's hard to suddenly untangle yourself and try and stretch away from that music.
Yeah.
Onto graph. It's graph, you've experienced that.
That's right.
You haven't experienced the music yet. So you thinking, yes, you know, let me just one more year of music. So I was rapping, man.
Got into the book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was rapping.
Mad MC.
Yeah.
Freestyling? Like, was it house music? What kind of, how did that play out?
Well, you know, most of the friends, even Drax and them lot.
Old tight Drax.
Big up. WD.
Yeah. So listen, by this juncture, Robbo. Just like to point out, boy, yeah, Robbo.
My brother.
Boy. Like, there was some no messing fucking hardcore graffiti crews back in the day, without question. All of you, like, you paved the way of the mentality and the way art is created. It's mad. It's the organism of graph. If it wasn't for that era, the golden era of such, you know what I mean? It was just, you know.
Look, we didn't realise how lucky we was to be in that time, because the change was just so rapid.
Because it became from hard hip hop, then it went into like the love of dance and rave, right? It was. That was one of the key things in music. It was moving in a...
Yeah, because, I mean, from... Before we was doing graffiti, we was doing breakdancing anyway. So the dancing was there and the music was there.
Did you ever go to Carnaby? Not Carnaby, did you ever go to Covent Garden?
Yeah, we unfortunately, Untouchables, we had a bad rep. Some of my members used to take out a lot of the shops. I mean, you know, there's let's say 500 of the Untouchables would end up in Covent Garden. The breakaway ones, you know. Obviously, Rampage, the whole street. You know, not just five shops, but the whole street is being rampaged. And I would start usually and wouldn't stop there, you know. So even with racking, you know, yeah, we'd walk into it. We'd rack the whole, you know, all every paint. Whoa. Just swoop in
every paint.
Yeah, more or less. Because we had confidence, you know, we thought.
Fearless.
Yeah, it would seem that. But, you see, we weren't like disorderly. For you would see me helping an old lady across the road with her shopping. You know, I'd do that for my friend's mum and, you know, all around my area. It was like this. So it's a natural instinct.
That's right, yes.
But there's also the energetic side of us.
The fire and water.
Yeah, so we didn't want to pay for all these things. And, you know, we racked a lot of the paint. And that would be it'd be crazy, crazy funny days, you know. But that'd make the newspapers, so all that would naturally make Untouchables seem more unapproachable. But we wasn't like that, you know. We have a wild solid, you know what I mean? So the wild became more animal, you know, and the hunger. For instance, when Swatches came out, we ain't going to just take five, you know, some of the groups, the Untouched. Rack out Suffrages and Harrods, you know, and Krez, everyone, you know, Spotty, hell, he had hands the size of shovels. So when he's leaving something, you ain't going to see it. So, for instance, look, see this Guinness?
Yeah.
This would disappear in his hand. Like, literally, he'll go to pick it up, and his whole hand is gone. You can't see the bottle. His hands are massive. So he...
is that it's unthinkable, let alone untouchable. Yeah. That's mad.
But
did all of you... Okay, so what was an average rampage? Like, how many of tea you would be? I mean, I'm purely quick, because a lot of people out there, they are going to... These are the kind of questions that they want.
The most famous rampages that you speak of, it's definitely the Hammersmith one. That made the newspapers and the ITN.
Did it?
So, because TU decided to hold a train and no one left. And there was a standoff between TU and the police. And that standoff lasted 8 hours.
Eight.
Going into the next morning, they negotiated, promised us none of us would be arrested as long as we don't break no more glass. So I begged hell not to rob no more people. So we kept to our word, you know.
Wow. It's just, excuse me, it's a fucking lot to take in. Because just going back to what I mentioned from the beginning, like, the reputation precedes the name. But not being from that age, for that era, not even living in the city at the time, these are just whispers. And you know, you're never that close. You know there's smoke, but you're never that close to flame. And then as these podcasts have developed, you know, the notoriety is almost like a folklore. It's an energy.
You know, I'll give you this. You know, before TU came to Graf, the war was being won by BTP and LTs, and they had an upper hand. So when TU came, all that suddenly changed, and it was the other way around. And that's where it got a bit, where we started to make a stand, is where it got so bad, where they got to the stage where we was, and our friend was murdered. Because we decided, if but five of the Untouchables was there that night, ain't no way Rays would have died. They would have fled. That's fact. You know, I even said to Khan, if he wasn't there, I would be going back. I would have fought.
Mm.
You know? And he stopped me going back for Rays. He said, it's too late. Look, he's been arrested. We thought he was arrested. We didn't know he was dead. So we went and told Marilyn, Rays' mum, listen, got Chase. Definitely he's been nicked, you know. They definitely got him, mum. Please, let's clear his room. Because that's what they do.
Yeah, they come go back in, yeah.
And early hours of the morning, she knew my mum. And so she spoke to my mum. And then my mum ran down the stairs, shouting and crying, because she knew Gary. And she told me. And that's how we knew Rays had died. We didn't even know he died that night. And that was the worst thing. So that was hard for me to live with, you know. Because by God, no way Khan would have stopped me. Yeah. And I don't know if I would have been too late, but I would have tried, you know. I never knew. So the memories of Graf, for all the younger Grafers, and I know they're artists, many going to be legendary. I don't know if...
Well, you know, like, loads of different age groups watch this podcast. So any musings you have, any thoughts you have on that subject, gratefully...
There'll never be another Untouchables crew like that, because you wouldn't want to wish any death in any form at that age, you know. But what we did, you know, was so, at times, powerful for our age, and given the numbers and the bravery and the different regiments within. We had Untouchables that didn't do graffiti, and they was just there, and we would call on them and say, if we're going knees, then before Razor's death, we used to take the Mickey out of that place. That night, we was small-handed. We weren't expecting that, you know. So when you got everyone with you, big numbers, you're safe. But never will there be another Untouchables, nor will there be another WD,
no.
I should suggest. Because what we did is beyond, without sacrifice. Mm. So you know there's going to be sacrifice. Why bother, you know, do it another way? And plus, nowadays, you know, toe-to-toe nowadays is not just left at it. You know, people come back with knives and, you know, guns and whatnot. So the toe-to-toe days are over. You know, so they'd have to be carrying, not baseball bats, you know, they'd have to be carrying...
some heavy.
Yeah, and just for the art, would you want to... do that just to be able to express your art and hurting another.
Yeah.
So if it was in defence, viable in some way, in some eyes, because you've gone in there, not shouting and fighting, but quietly, and start to do your piece. It's only when woof comes on to you.
And this is where it, in terms of case study, I mean, first of all, big shout out to everybody. Everybody in that era of TU, wow, like the Pandora box of this conversation and the honesty in which you provide the accounts, like you say, it is the no smoke without fire effect. And it to me, if these certain moments in the timeline hadn't have happened, TU wouldn't have been such an aggressive force of its time. It was almost like you said at some point in this conversation, you said your back's against the wall. You guys, through the coming up, through the deaths, through the antagonizing, through Carnival, through all the other life interchanges that you experienced as young people, this was like, it was a call to arms, and it was the only decide, it was the only option.
Yeah, sometimes like Ryan used to, and a few others used to say, listen man, I think to you, we were sent to save some of the graphers, you know, because when we came in, you know, writers would be tagging. And for instance, in Harrow, I remember, you know, a group of boys, and I can't remember this writer's name. You know, whether it be Toy or not. Because I used to have a beginning. So I respect his beginning. So I don't...
You don't go that
business.
Yeah,
like this, you know. Unless he's claiming he's a master, and really the piece is a toy. You know, and I'll be honest with him or her. But in this case, nah, you know, so... And I remember all the writers in them. It's like a waiting room, but it's enclosed. So I was there and I was looking. And they, I don't know if they were drunk or not, this other group. And they walked up to the writer. He hadn't done nothing to them. And they was, looked like they were calling him names. Mug, we don't graph, you idiot, and all this. And I think he was just saying, leave me alone. I'm not doing nothing wrong. And they started to attack him. So I went over there and I defended him. So in that moment of madness, you know, you don't see that whether it's 5, 6, 10, 20 people is a danger for you if you're going to save someone's life. You know, you're not going to, that won't stop you, especially when another writer is being stopped like that. So we was... A lot of that we did, you know. So most of the notoriety probably come from saving a lot of writers. Train jams. Oh, I remember train jams. Yeah.
Go on, please indulge.
But this is the first time I've met Robbo, you know, and I loved him since.
Oh, rest in peace, Robbo. Yes. That's one man which, wow, I would...
So many have fallen.
Yeah. It's, that's one thing that... I mean, it's what I base a lot of these podcasts on, you know. It's just knowing that the fault lines of where things came about and how important those moments are in time, new and old.
Yeah, his death was a surprise to me because last time I spoke to him, I was supposed to meet him. He was trying to get me to do this documentary. He told me that a war could be coming with him and Banksy. And I remember speaking to Drax as well. But I was more closer with Robbo, you know. I speak to Drax.
I love Drax.
You know, he's
my guy.
Yeah.
WD man, just.
Yeah, I wish I met him that day, but experience and the change is somewhat stains your heart, you know.
Does it?
Through the music genre,
yeah.
I knew of friends who died through ease. Yeah. I knew friends who died through the genre of graph.
Mm.
I knew people who died through the genres of the road horrors, yeah. Freedom fighting. Even down to the Tottenham riots, Brixton riots, Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Touchables was there. I remember we saved that DJ, Tim Westwood. He was a nobody back then, but he was respected in the hood. You get it?
Mm.
So before he went on to Radio 1, was not even existing, nor was Kiss. You know, them radio stations didn't exist. Yeah. So he used to come to all days, and he was in Stonebridge. So he was surrounded by the Stonebridge posse. Now, Stonebridge, Crumb, Dime, Lieutenant, Two Tone, all them lot was all around them. Sass. This is the other side of the Untouchables. So we barricaded and just made sure he was safe. From that day, we dragged him away from being robbed. All his chain was given back, his ring, his watch, something else, some wallet, all them things got back to him, and he was never touched again. And I remember Airways, Maine, stood next to him through the whole set. And then never, them two was like this, but after, when he got through the DJing, that was it. We all parted our lives, but I don't think he'd be alive if it wasn't for our interviews that day, to be honest.
Wow.
And look where he's got us, man, in music. Without him, you know, most people wouldn't even have heard of hip-hop here.
Telling you.
You know?
Listen, and I hold my hat. Until further notice, I'm saying, without Tim Westwood, people, as much as he didn't play the things everyone wanted him to play at certain times... That guy, he's done his thing.
Him and David Rodigan.
All day.
David.
They're the Rammer Jam.
Soldiers refuse. You know, you see, that's just being real. Do you know what I mean? That's just love.
Bro, these are...
You know what I mean?
In my mind, they're figureheads. They're the soundtrack to the streets. They're the soundtrack to...
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yes.
Proper.
And... You know, through all them times, to be honest, I wish the younger ones could go through some of the joys that we went through without the negatives and the dark and the horrors, you know. Because then they would realise, goodness me, it's not just about doing your outline on paper and just doing it there and then on the train or on the wall. There was so much before and in between and after, you know. And most of them don't experience that, you know. I don't think they'd even contemplate in a group of 20 to even think, hold on, why are we running? Shouldn't they be running from us? We're not setting the trains on fire. We're piecing. So... If they come in the army, fine, we'll leave. But, you know, just some of the things that we went through, I don't think they are going to be able to experience it.
Do you think time, the world the way it is now and how easily accessible, how, because I grew up in that, I was young, but I know the temperature in what you're talking of, and there are levels which could still, like you say, be very much applied now. The things in hindsight could be applied even now, but there is like we spoke about this before we went on camera. you know, even walking outside here, you were just like, yo, this place has changed since yeah, I was here.
Yeah, exactly, man. Because, like I said, the deaths, I mean, I've carried over 100 coffins of my friends. And, you know, after all that memory, you have to get into a job where you can be able to save lives, especially if you've lost a whole line of friends. And then at last, your mum, that took so much of my power, so much of my everything, you know. And that was a time, the changes to me being a vegetarian.
Did it's like your family's like kryptonite, isn't it? It just keeps you at level. It makes you feel immortal.
Exactly. And
then when that goes,
suddenly you're walking on the planet Earth on your own. That's how it feels. You know, you have friends, but you're alone because they hug their mother and their father, and you know, you see all these things, and you really appreciate when you was younger, and wish that maybe you spent more. Yeah, you know. And for me,
did your mother? Did, if you don't mind me asking, did your mum experience? How did she feel about the behaviour and the lifestyle that you chose? Was it something she accepted?
No. She would never.
She didn't know.
I never been stopped in the yard. Nor did they ever stop any other TU in the yard or for graph, apart from that night. And but she knew of the later stages because my friends were dying from being stabbed and gunshots, and these are the later stages of London. And it seems sometimes it's gone back and done a whole U-turn because some of the youngers are fighting out there on postcode wars and silly things. It's like, can you imagine two graffiti crews going to battle for a line, but then they start to stab and shoot each other over graffiti? Can you imagine that? It never happened. No. And that's where it's all gone a bit chaotic now, because some of the things they do now to each other, we would only imagine in the horror to do to probably save a friend's life or your own life, but not the way they overpost areas. And I just think, you know, they need the history and the waking up, because then they'll appreciate each other and know, wow, how it takes to bring a life, and your mum carrying you for 9 months, and you being a dad worrying, all the things that you go through bringing your kid in, and you think of that journey. And then when they have this wisdom, you know, and all these values and disciplines, you know, for instance, helping an old lady or an old man across the road because he's blind or he's carrying a heavy load, would they laugh and boo and jest at him and kick him? You know, that's inhumane, you know. The Untouchables were Russia fella for that. 90% was graph. There was only 10% that was outside graph, you know.
Right.
That we call on as Mayday. And they will back us till the end.
That's the red phone.
That's, yeah. And that was the dangerous side of us, you know, the unstoppable force of us. It'd be hard to get a group like that now. Very hard, unless the police will see them as terrorist group or something.
That's a point. It's yeah. true.
But that's not what it is, you know. But it would be deemed or classed like some kind of mad, do you know what I mean?
Mm.
So,
And actually, on balance, when we look at that, the outfit, the front of Steamers TU, like you say, it could be deemed 2021, 2022 as like, yo, that's a terrorist group. Mayday, mayday. But on the flip side, graffiti itself has... It's done a complete and utter role reversal to the thing. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, street art is a thing. And it makes it palatable in a way that takes that... it takes away the mission brief. It takes away the you guys had a motive, you had an agenda, you had a mission brief. That's been taken away by the street art tag, hasn't it?
Yeah, but you see, look, not all street artists or graffiti artists are generally gonna be affixed right throughout their career to art. Some of them could be hidden footballers.
Yeah.
Remember, TU had not only members who died or became lords of the streets and Lone Wolf and Dangerous Shogun and Disarmers, and some became football. Orly Harris became a boxer.
And then take Marvin, for instance. He's a successful guy doing podcasts and entertainment.
Luck, Neat, all these people was in TU.
Hold on, Luck and Neat.
Michael, ask Luck, man.
Oh, that's going to be a fucking great conversation.
Joel, we used to write Luck, so he always had that name. Yeah.
That's incredible. Neat. See, there's some street culture for you.
There's many DJs actually. Hopper, I believe, was known in the rave scene as yourself, but he was TU. So look, the span could turn different.
And also, the reason why I brought up a street art angle is, for those of you that ain't watching and are listening, behind me right now are some astonishing watercolor pieces. To get up close is just as good as going from the back here to where you guys
here's
are watching.
What art
and we're looking at if you're not watching, we're just frying up some pieces now to camera. So if you want to check out Kelevision YouTube or on the Kelevision app, it's the one. And beautiful, absolutely stunning.
As many writers have hidden characters within them, you know, you yourself was a human beatbox and you went on to great stages, man.
Thank you, my brother. And that's it. Means the world coming
yourself.
From you, my mate.
Yeah, it does. Honestly. So, a lot of the youths in graffiti now, some may go on to be legendary in their own skills.
Yeah.
You know, that could be watching this now, thinking... Whoa, you know.
Absolutely, because this is a testament to the acumen of, like, the apprenticeship of graph, which is something that I constantly reiterate. It's like, you can't have a throw-up without a tag. You can't have a piece without a throw-up. You can't have this kind of activity without the 10,000 hours that go into being creative.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yes, and it does take a great courage to be able to...
Yeah.
Pick up cans, pick up yourselves, and go into a yard, knowing the implications, and do a piece.
Oh, hell yeah.
That courage goes to every writer who's ever experienced that, and those who yet to, safely. And I say safely because I've seen it firsthand, the pain and the sorrow is bad. I still see Gary now. And then thoughts don't leave you, you know. After 100 coffins of my friends, it still doesn't leave you. And I don't want to hear of writers like that. And so the younger ones, you know, be a group and it's love. Remember, the unity is the strength. You know, that's what BTP will want. And that's your enemy, not your friend. You know, if you against art, then surely an enemy, not as if you're at war, but obviously if they murdered your friend, then yes, it's war. But you generally, the safety is in unity.
Yeah.
And your style matters a lot. Like most
Oh my God, hold on, can we just get into your... Right, we've been bouncing bits and bobs across the airways recently, and dude, like, for somebody that does not go into any, well, did not, rather, hindsight, go into any yard with any paper, honestly, just perspective alone on some of the pieces, there was this one, I will throw up the one that you sent through that I was just like, yo, that A makes it looks like a road in the distance.
Yes.
Yeah. And then the figure comes up front. And because
it's Guardian Angel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was in the Rays. That was a Rays tribute piece.
That anniversary, yeah. Yes.
Fantastic, man.
Gary Baxter is Rays to you.
Yeah.
And for all the other team members, Hell, Main, John Jar, Evil,
yeah.
Uni, Farrell, Bliss, Zone. King Robo, I call him, because, look, you don't have to be king of all lions to be king. Most people need to realise that. You know, there's different sectors of king in every lion. So I know one writer who's going to watch this is definitely going to become a king on a lion, you know, maybe two.
That's so
three.
True. No, you're absolutely right, because that can't be unmissed. You're right.
So the ones that are not here, they don't want to see any writer lose their life. So, yeah, I always say to the younger ones, caution, because after the glamour, the pain is still there for me. And I don't see the fame. I don't see what everyone else sees. What I see is my friend and friends. And even my mother. And them things stay with you. You know, so if I didn't achieve the number of pieces that I promised to raise, I don't think I would have been here to give the interview in this sanity, you know, because I would have dishonoured. And that's not what TU or me especially would have done, you know. So, yeah, caution to all the writers out there. Know the tracks, live rails. We used to do a homeworks killer. We used to say, yeah, right, you know, the first is safe. The second one, you got to watch it. Sometimes the fourth or the third rail and the last one. So we work out, we study, and we know what tracks we're stepping on. So even the train is coming towards us, you can hear the electric sounds. We know what line to step on. And we'd run across there, do that throw up or the toe, run across back onto the platform, and that train pulls into the station. Yeah. And that's how Jonja died. So that's why I say caution, you know, because, yeah, surfing, all of it, it brings danger and thrills, you know, but just have caution. Yeah.
And on that note, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes at least this part of what I can only describe as one hell of a journey. And the documentary, I think, will be testament to further analysis and story.
Ganja to you, Jason. Raise Hell. Main, Evil. Yeah. Robo.
Oh, yeah.
Chucky, all of them. Mm. That's not here.
Yeah.
You know, all them names. This documentary will represent art, not just TU form, but the whole spectrum of graph. And it's mainly for Raze's mum, mm. you know, because she endured something that most of the mothers didn't.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And she's on her own on that one. And I'll always call her mum. Yeah. It hurts me to see her. Just brings me, it's like seeing Ray sometimes. Yeah.
Mm.
But she doesn't know that. Maybe she will now, but, you know.
And I will happily help you and be a part of that journey, bro.
This is one of the co-producers, and we're going to be happy. Honestly, the whole TU is going to bow in honour and respect and love and just know a lot of the writers and even future writers are going to see it. Like, yep. We saw certain programs.
That happened.
And then channel your art. It's this Killer Kel station. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. It's Untouchables.
That's right. My guy.
And you was going to let them know.
Yeah.
If you're going to zoom in yeah. your own time.
Yeah, we're zooming in on this with, if you're not watching again, we're zooming in right now on some fucking heavy duty. It's not for the faint-hearted, this kind of art. There's a study in these levels outside of, you know, art world critique and, you know. So, you know, it's not for the faint-hearted. And what you've done is what you're doing. What we're here for is, you know, the study of a man that's come from one crazy world straight into the here and now. And it's been an absolute fucking pleasure, my brother. Thank you so much. So much value. So much documenting. A big shout out to everybody and to you. And again, your WD, you know. PFB,
da-da-dum.
DDS.
I mean, for the love of the Untouchables, WD, WRH, da-da-dum.
WRH,
for the love of the Untouchables, da-da-dum.
KTC.
Killer Kel, big up all the groups and all the artists and graph artists.
That's right.
All the musicians out there, the sports people. Anyone who's channeling, big them up.
Create,
you know,
art.
Because respect
art.
To Killer Kel.
Yeah.
So, you know, just channeling this is another form of Westwood.
No.
Honestly, what you're doing is heavyweight, and you know, I can't wait till you start the work on the documentary with us.
Bro,
so it's an honor.
I will host my heart out for you.
It's an honor, man. People love, man.
My
Don't
guy,
touch.
Steam to you, hey? What did I promise you? All right, we only give it to you raw, proper, uncensored. All right, we're out like eels out of fashion. All right, till next week. Don't speak to anyone. I wouldn't. All right. Thank you very much, my brother. Peace. Did you get fucking goosebumps on?